everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you. Midweek edition. We are off and running on Wednesday, July the 12th, 2023. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, comfortably ensconced, is that the right word, in the air conditioning?
Enclosed.
Enclosed. And what in the world, July, hot as a firecracker, the hottest, we're off to the hottest
start. Hottest start for the month of July, on record.
Unbelievable. And we had six straight days of excessive heat warnings. That also a record.
Well, you know, that's one thing we have going for us so far this week. We haven't had any excessive heat warnings.
We'll take a little
victory. This is just our normal heat.
Yeah, normal heat. And there was a lot of lightning around our area in the foothills, but not a drop of rain. Not yet, anyway. Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, K-Voice, Tucson's trusted voice for news and talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our telephone interviews, that is sponsored by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's get the ball rolling right here in the studio. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo is the superintendent of Tucson Unified School District, Southern Arizona's largest district, educating more than 40,000 students. And this is a district with a very proud, historic past. Dr. Trujillo, first of all, great to see you. 1867. I wonder if that makes Tucson Unified the oldest school district in Arizona.
It is. It's the oldest organized traditional public school district in the state of Arizona, of course, going back, obviously, to when this was Arizona territory.
Hmm. Well, a lot's been happening. Summer, traditionally a slow, well, I don't think you can say that too many times anymore in the news business, because your job really is 24/7, 12 months out of the year, but there really isn't much of a summer break for you. And the board, the governing board, the five members of the board did pass a new budget last night.
Yeah, a great meeting last night, passed the district's budget for the 24-25 school year. This budget features almost 54% of the entire budget spent directly inside of the classroom, over 70% of the district's over $500 million budget spent at the schools. So the portion of the budget that goes directly in the classroom, of course, teacher salaries, inside the classroom instructional materials, inside the classroom teacher's aides. And then you've got a healthy percentage of our budget spent on professional development and training for our teachers at the school level, and then school level student support resources like counselors and social workers and interventionists for math and reading. So a big victory with last night's budget. I remember the days where TUSD came under fire because it couldn't spend 45% of its budget at the school level, and here we are spending almost 71%. That's a big victory.
How are you able to move some things around? How is this possible to spend that kind of money at the schools?
Well, we've made some tough decisions over the last 7 years to downsize district administration, which is a small part of it, but then making big commitments with salary and compensation and giving several years now of really healthy raises to base salaries for teachers, increasing the amount of teachers' assistants and paraprofessionals that we're placing in classrooms, significantly increasing the amount of music teachers that we're assigning to schools at this point, making big investments in social workers and counselors at the campus level. So these investments have taken the last several years, and they're really hallmark achievements, I think, of our administration and this board.
What will the enrollment numbers look like when students return to the classroom on August the 2nd? Generally, where are you right now with enrollment?
Well, we're a shade under 40,000. We're expecting to open at over 40,000 students, which basically just puts us on target with where we opened up last year. We know right now the big hitter for us with enrollment is the Tucson Unified Virtual Academy. Here we are heading into our second regular school year. When I say regular, a school year that is basically a pre-COVID school year, and we still have almost 1,100 families choosing the online virtual environment, largely for reasons that have nothing to do with COVID. I think that in this format, students and parents have discovered they have a greater control of time, their learning environment, flexibility. The fears that parents have around school safety and gun violence and bullying can be addressed by opting into the TUVA environment. And so I think that's why our virtual academy continues with higher than expected enrollment.
Have you been beefing up the virtual academy, the infrastructure for that, Dr. Trujillo?
Yeah, we actually now have secured approval by the Arizona Department of Education and, of course, the State Board of Education that now recognizes the Tucson Unified Virtual Academy as an actual Board of Education recognized online school. And so now it is, instead of just a niche program that was born of the pandemic, it's now a full-on recognized online school.
This spending package that was approved last night, we've got school beginning really in just a matter of weeks. And as Tom and I were talking about, this is really, we're off to a very hot July, and who knows what August will be like. But what does the infrastructure, what does the air conditioning infrastructure look like at all of the schools in your portfolio?
Well, we've put in as much work as we can in terms of being able to prioritize the repairs of the schools where HVAC systems are in critical need. However, we don't have enough money to take care of the HVAC needs of all 86 schools at this time, which is why you see a lot of schools that either their projects are so big, meaning that they need a full-on HVAC tower replacement, they have to wait until the State School Facilities Board approves of the request, which could be a lengthy process, or we have to provide temporary cooling until we can schedule them for repairs. And a lot of times that deals with the availability of a vendor and money, which is another reason why our board has opted to go out and call for a special election for a bond, because we just don't simply have the money right now to do the number one, the preventative maintenance that needs to be done to extend the life of working HVAC systems, and the full-on replacements that need to happen with so many schools where the HVAC system is near failure.
So the bond program will include infrastructure items.
The centerpiece of the bond package is infrastructure items like critical repair and replacement of heating and cooling systems throughout the district, electrical systems, plumbing, the replacement of sewer lines that are long overdue. And then, of course, the big focus area is safety, school safety. Better fencing, better gating, more fortified entry points, camera surveillance systems throughout the district, modernized alarm systems and intercoms. So it is a package that we feel is necessary to not only modernize the district, but to ensure to the extent that we can that not one of our schools become the next Uvalde.
The program will, what's the money number on that bond program?
We're targeting a 30-year bond to the tune of $480 million to modernize the district.
You know, a school beginning in August, early August, to me anyway, just doesn't make sense. And I'm Tom's agreeing with me on the other side of the glass on this. I'm just wondering where that came from, maybe going back, I don't know why school ever began in August. Why not after Labor Day?
Well, that has to do with our friends at the Arizona Department of Education and the State Board of Education that set requirements around instructional minutes. The minimum amount of minutes that are required, the minimum amount of days that can go into a school year in order for students to get academic credit or in order for them to promote to the next grade level. And we've seen a great deal of inflexibility in those two bodies, those two regulatory bodies, that would allow for us to start a little bit later. And I think it's in their hands. It really is. And I do think that our employees would welcome the opportunity to begin the school year after Labor Day, but still be able to get out pre-Memorial Day for the same reason, heat. By the time you're getting to Memorial Day, you're roasting almost just as much as you are starting
in
August.
It's just crazy. Yeah. Anyway, we'll take a break right here. There's a lot going on at Tucson Unified, including this new student code of discipline. We will explore that. We'll hear the superintendent articulate what that involves. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. We'll take a break right here. Be back with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo from Tucson Unified. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you, midweek edition of our daily program. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo is with us. Dr. Trujillo, superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District, the oldest school district in the state and the largest school district in southern Arizona. This student code of discipline has been kicked around. Some have kicked it down the road, kicked the can down the road, but it's been talked about for several years now, Dr. Trujillo. It is now a reality. There is a new student code of discipline. Will it make the classroom a safer, more learning-friendly environment?
Yes, it will. I have been a big champion of this new code of conduct because I think it represents the best balance between an intervention-based approach to teaching students how to make better decisions and balancing that with more immediate and more serious consequences for bad behavior or for poor decision-making on the part of the students, which I believe will translate into a learning environment where, number one, the teacher is in full control, where the teacher feels that their authority is respected and is not undercut by overly permissive disciplinary policy that allows students to challenge their authority. And ultimately, I feel that it's going to make learning the primary job of the student and teaching the primary job of the teacher versus policing or imposing disciplinary action or spending an inordinate amount of time managing disruptive behavior. And that's our goal. And I believe ultimately this is going to lead to better teacher retention, safer classrooms, and better enrollment for our schools. I hear so much from parents that the reason that they opt out of a lot of, especially our middle school options, is because of disruptive behavior either on the campus or in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. So how will the students know that there is a new sheriff in town, a new code of discipline? Will it be posted prominently at school?
Yeah, we're going to do more than post. We're actually putting together the materials, the training materials for teachers to actually, during the first 7 to 10 days of school, actually have classroom teaching sessions where they'll be walking our students through the features of the new code of conduct, and there'll be a sign-off that we will be asking of all of our students and our parents once they are fully educated and trained on the new code of conduct. We will be training our principals and our administrators next week as our principals gather for summer professional development. So it's going to be an ongoing year-long training and support that we will be providing so that everybody is very, very clear with what our behavioral expectations are of our young people.
Will there be enough men and women to take care of the needs of the classroom as we begin school August 2nd?
Yeah, we believe that we have enough personnel, that we are looking right now at our critical shortage areas, which are always special education and math. And we're in a little bit of a better spot than we were last year. We still have several teaching vacancies that we're dealing with. So it's going to come down to the wire, but we do expect to be ready to open school, meaning that any open positions that we still need are going to be staffed with long-term subs able to take the job until we can make a hire or we've made a hire outright.
What about getting the students to the class, to the campus? That requires professional drivers, bus drivers. Do you have enough there?
Well, thanks to the governing board's action last winter and the establishment of the hourly rate of pay for bus drivers at $18.25, we have the highest paid rates in Pima County now to drive a bus. And we've seen that. We've seen applicants coming in like we've never seen them before.
Did I hear you right? Nearly $20 now to
nearly $20 to drive a bus. Yeah. And we're seeing them now flock to TUSD. And I never thought I'd say that. I mean, it's been a long 3 years. And, you know, to have at this point in time over 170 drivers ready to go is radically different than when we were a year ago. We were sitting at 148 to open up school. So what this means for parents, it's going to be more routes available. It's going to mean that those routes that disappeared a few years ago because we didn't have enough drivers, that route at the end of your street, that route that was a block away that disappeared and made you drive a little bit further to drop your kid off at a hub, it's like going to reappear now because we have more drivers. So that's we're excited about that.
Well, that's good money. And I don't know what it's like to drive a bus. I've never done it. But if someone's interested, you actually, from what I understand, walked the folks through the process to help them graduate, if you will, from the Department of Motor Vehicles, which requires a driver's license for a bus, special bus permit.
A commercial driver license, CDL.
Yeah. But you take them through that process.
We actually, we actually will give them classes.
There you go.
That they can get a CDL.
All right. We got a couple of quick calls to take. on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go to line one, Chuck, about the budget. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes, Dr. Trujillo, you mentioned that you passed a new budget last night for TUSD. Can you tell us how what the money amount was, please?
The money amount, when you add up the desegregation budget, the money we get from state funding and all of our federal grants, is around $560 million for all 86 schools in the district.
And that's compared to what last year?
Same.
The same, okay. So as far as our taxpayers go, it doesn't represent any increase?
It doesn't represent an increase in the property taxes that are being paid right now. We are levying the same taxes that we did in the previous fiscal year. Now, what is on the table, Chuck, and what would be a tax increase is if the voters this fall voted for the TUSD bond. That would be a tax increase.
Okay.
I understand.
Thank you. Thank you, Chuck. Let's go to line two. Matt would like to speak with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, the superintendent of Tucson Unified. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, well, I haven't had a chance to review the new policy regarding discipline, but, you know, I hope it has a two-tiered phase in the sense that part of it deals with students, but also part of it deals with students and parents, because I think really it's the parents' responsibility. And I hope that the teachers understand that it's a tool, not a weapon. Second thing, Dr. Trujillo, could you give us an update on where you think, given the extreme heat hitting the country, where are we on maintenance with regards to our HVAC systems in each of the schools, and basically the overall general condition of our facilities? Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you, Matt. And we right now, that's priority number one, is getting the HVAC systems in shape to meet the cooling needs of the district on August 4th. So we're establishing sort of a three-tier approach where we're establishing the schools that are experiencing cooling needs that are in critical need of attention now, meaning HVAC systems that are at the brink of failure, and prioritizing them for attention and repair now. Then a second tier of schools that have HVAC systems that are on their way to failing, and we have to work with outside contractors to get them in and get them to shape for August 4th. And then our third tier is general preventative maintenance for schools that we need to get in there, and we need to take a look at Freon levels and water levels and the health of towers to make sure that they are in shape for August 4th. So that's kind of our just a 30,000 foot overview of the approach to looking at cooling right now.
Money from the federal government that went to districts across the country during the COVID pandemic, is there one more year on that money generally?
That money expires on June 30th, 2024, and TUSD's expenditure plan sees us spending every cent.
On what areas?
Well, you're restricted to with COVID dollars. Number one, you can only spend those dollars on dealing with academic learning loss for kids. You can spend them on mitigation efforts to prevent the spread of the virus. You can spend them those dollars on enhancements or modifications to air quality and HVAC systems. And you can spend them on employee retention. And so that those are really the only five areas. You can also spend them on outdoor learning environments as part of mitigation efforts. So what you can't do is really go out and fix the roof at Pueblo High School.
But you could use for sanitation purposes.
You could use for sanitation purposes. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We only have 2 minutes left. Overall on the academic fall off from the pandemic, please.
Well, we are we're very, very proud of the results that came in on the second administration of the Arizona Academic Skills Assessment. Overall, our kids grew at a rate of between 5 and 10% improvement in both English, language, arts, and math. That is still not where we were before the pandemic, because we did lose about a year and a half of in-person learning, which we know is the most effective format for our kids. And we also know that we still have some work to do to shrink the gap in achievement between the state of Arizona and TUSD kids.
So there was this fall off. We have all heard of that, but the cliff is coming a little bit. The ground is coming up to the cliff.
The ground is coming up to the cliff. It
yes.
is a slow march up.
Yes.
But it is coming up. Yes, absolutely. It's going to be a multi-year recovery effort.
All right, Dr. Trujillo, what is number one priority then for you in the new school year, please?
Number one priority in the new school year is the new code of conduct and making sure that it is widely communicated and supported. And two, making sure that the voters have all the information they need to make an appropriate decision on whether or not to support a bond for TUSD.
All right, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, good luck with the new school year. We will have you on the show a week or two after the year begins. We'll get an update at that point. Thank you very much. Hope you have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, take a break right here, midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Up next, Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott waiting in the wings.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. They have the naming rights. We're glad they do as part of our studio here at the Bustos Media Tucson Broadcast Complex, where we now have five radio stations under one roof. But Green Things is the place to go now as the summer rains begin. We hope very soon here within the metro area, but
Some of our friends down south of Tucson have gotten some pretty good rain. Anyway, good time to put some color in the garden, get ready for the rain. Go by Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Beautiful 13-acre site, very close to, in fact, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. GreenThingsAZ.com is the website. Their sister business, which does very well with all that beautiful imported merchandise, much of it handcrafted in Mexico, is Zocalo Village, zocalovillage.com, Green Things, 53 years now in business. When we do our telephone interviews, that live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. But I'm happy to say that both our principal interviews today, it's eye to eye with Bill in studio, and it's always a pleasure to welcome back Supervisor Rex Scott, one of five members of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. He is a Democrat representing District 1, which kind of the north of River area up where I live. I'm one of Rex's constituents. Good to see you, sir.
Bill, great to be here with you and to have this monthly opportunity to talk about the issues that are important to Pima County and to engage with you and your listeners.
So widely publicized, it was the former Quail Canyon Golf Course, and like so there's quite a few areas around the country that are finding golf is not quite as popular as it once was, and we're repurposing some of those areas, and this is one of them. And go through basically what this California developer wanted to do and what now with the approval yesterday on a 4-1 vote, what is in store for that area?
Well, the golf course at the intersection of Oracle and Rudisill has been closed for a number of years. But what the developer was proposing was on the north end of the parcel, several apartment buildings that would have 210 apartments. And he made a commitment for 40% of them to be either one bedroom or studio apartments, which will certainly help with affordability. And in the southern end of the parcel, there would be 100 single family homes. Now, there could end up being more single family homes than that because of an agreement that the developer made with the Coalition for Sonoran Desert Protection, which has been around ever since the county put in place the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. And the coalition has said that for every 4,000 feet of additional open space, there can be one more single-family home, up to 120. So we'll see how that goes. But one of the documents that I brought for you to look at today is all of the different concessions and commitments that the developer made to preserve open space, to protect wildlife corridors, to restore and protect riparian habitat. And one of the things that was most impressive is that our flood control district, and this isn't on the page that I just shared with you, but it's information that was shared with the board, our flood control district is going to require them to plant 112 trees and 135 shrubs in one area of the parcel and 68 trees and 105 shrubs in another. So there's really going to be a lot of attention given to respecting Pima Wash and not only making sure that riparian habitat is protected, but also making sure that the development is unlikely to be flooded. The proposed development leaves the entire federally designated floodway intact, and the areas within the floodplain that need to be elevated are being elevated higher than the normal standard because Pima Wash is in the burn scar from the Bighorn Fire. And our flood control district, Bill, and it's one of the most highly rated agencies of its kind in the country, said that from its perspective, the development meets and exceeds not just local, but also federal and state flood mitigation standards for this type of development. And our standards, and this is one of the reasons why the Pima County Regional Flood Control District is so highly rated, are actually higher than federal standards. So I know there were a lot of concerns raised about the potential of flooding, but I put a lot of stock in the advice and guidance that the board got from the Regional Flood Control District.
The document you handed me, Quail Canyon Site Improvements and Environmental Commitments, I just totaled it up. There's 24 items here. There's a lot that were negotiated here.
There is, and at the bottom of that sheet are all the roadway improvements that the developer is responsible for, both on site and on roadways that are close to the parcel. And, you know, this is not affordable housing, as I said yesterday, but it is marketplace housing. And our Regional Affordable Housing Commission, which includes representatives from every supervisor and also representatives from all of the local jurisdictions, is going to be coming out with an assessment and an inventory of our housing stock. And people are going to see in hard numbers what we all know, which is that we need more housing at all segments of the market.
Do you believe that when it came to the opposition, and I think, was there like 1,000 people that had signed a petition?
There were.
Against it. Was that do you characterize that as perhaps people, the not in my backyard, they just did not want this extra development near their home?
Well, certainly the neighbors who triggered the supermajority requirement that is called for under Arizona state law.
Which would have to be a 4-to-1 vote.
Exactly correct. Certainly they had a lot of concerns about the development being so close to their properties, but I wouldn't characterize them as NIMBYs, nor would I characterize any of the opponents of the project in that way. I think everybody that I heard from had reasonable and thoughtful objections and concerns. And it took me a long time, Bill, for me to determine how I was going to vote on this matter. Ultimately, I ended up voting for the rezoning and voting for the project. But there were a lot of questions and concerns with flooding, riparian habitat protection, traffic on Rudisill Road, the appropriateness of the development, the density of the development that I had to grapple with myself. So I think everybody that we heard from had reasonable and thoughtful objections. And I really appreciated the way the hearing went yesterday. We had over 40 speakers, close to 50. And all of them.
Very civil.
Extraordinarily so. Extraordinarily so. It was really, if you are a fan of civic discourse, that hearing yesterday was a case study in terms of how our constituents conducted themselves.
All right, this would be a good time to take the break. We'll be back with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. Yesterday's meeting had a lot of items that are newsworthy and want to cover a couple more of them with Supervisor Scott. Let's take the break right here. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition of our program. We will take a break right here and be back with you right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And I always kind of chuckle because this time of year, we do the kind of unofficial Buckmaster Show guarantee that it will be 10 degrees cooler over in Silver City. And by and large, I'd say 95% of the time, that's pretty darn true. In fact, it's more usually than 10. It can be about 15 or even more degrees, 90 degrees right now, midday over in Silver City. And it's cooler because it's a higher elevation, like think Denver, about 5,500 feet. So it's a great getaway, 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org for a visit to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Over in Grant County, they have a 3-member Board of Supervisors, which is pretty typical, Rex Scott, for smaller rural counties. But here in Pima County, we have 5 members, of which you are one of the members. And wow, what a busy agenda, not only with the Quail Canyon that we have articulated during our first segment together, but other things. The sheriff's department came up. Is the sheriff a little bit over budget, Rex Scott?
You know, I think it's important for the community to know that the board has voted for pay raises for new hires and current hires within the sheriff's department each time the sheriff and the county administrator have brought those packages forward. I thought that there were certainly concerns that had been building up over a number of months about the sheriff's budget, but I don't think that that points to any kind of financial mismanagement on his part or on the part of his team. It has to do with the fact that just like every law enforcement agency in the country, he's dealing with a significant number of vacancies, although as he shared with the board yesterday, he's doing a great deal to address vacancies amongst deputies and corrections officers. And so he's had to pay a lot of overtime. That was the most significant reason for the department being over its budget.
A lot of those things you can't plan for in law enforcement.
Exactly. Exactly. And you have to make sure that the jail is appropriately staffed. You have to make sure that there are deputies out in our community wherever we need coverage. And then there were some other issues dealing with supplies and payments to vendors. And the board voted to close out last year's budget. The fiscal year ended on June 30th. The board voted to close out last year's budget and take care of those funds. And then we're going to circle back with the sheriff next month and talk about the overall budgetary concerns that the board has, that he has, and also ask the county administrator and her team to give us some guidance and direction as to how we can use these monthly financial forecasts that we get from her and the finance team and deal with those concerns right away instead of waiting months for several forecasts to build up. What I propose to Ms. Lesher and to my colleagues is that we have a standing agenda item on each board meeting so that we can take appropriate action or direct the administrator to take appropriate action when we see a concern in any department, not just the sheriff's department. But the sheriff is doing an excellent job. The board supports him and his deputies and correction officers completely. And we're going to find common ground to deal with these budgetary issues.
All right. You are the representative of Pima County on the 9-member board, the Regional Transportation Authority, the RTA board for looking at the NEXT program, and in fact, it's called RTA NEXT, as the current RTA program, countywide road repair and new road program, expires now in less than 3 years. What is the update, Rex Scott?
Well, I was privileged to sit in on a recent meeting of the Citizens Advisory Committee, and that is the group that the RTA board has charged with drafting a RTA NEXT proposal to send to us for our review and ultimately for us to send out to the public for the kind of community feedback that anybody who remembers the 2006 process will know is coming. We'll have literally dozens of opportunities for people to offer input into the RTA NEXT plan. And the Citizens Advisory Committee is advised by the Technical Management Committee, which is made up of the jurisdictional professionals from all 8 of the jurisdictions that are represented on the RTA board. And they voted at their last meeting by a vote of 16-8 to put together a framework for an RTA NEXT plan. Now, and the 16 people who voted for it really represented a broad cross-section of the Citizens Advisory Committee. They need to flesh that plan out. It was really more a framework than a detailed plan. They need to flesh that out and then send it on to the RTA board for consideration. We next meet on July 27th, and I'm hopeful that we are going to have, if not a complete draft of an RTA next proposal from them, at least a more substantive version than what they passed. But when you've got 16 of 24 voting members, and there were a few people absent voting in favor of something, that looks a lot like a mandate, and they need to own that mandate and flesh it out before they send it before the RTA board.
The document that you will receive, and it will probably be, I hope, more detailed than just a framework. Perhaps you'll receive that this month. Then what?
Well, at that point, the RTA board will determine what, if any, changes we want to make. Because remember, the CAC sends us a draft, and we will determine if we want to make any changes before we send it out for public review and the public's input. And then after we get that input, we could make yet more changes before we send it to the ballot.
The 8 who were voting that they didn't really like the framework, were they unified on one particular? Did they each have their kind of issues, or was there one overriding program?
The ones who shared the reasons for their votes, and people don't always explain the reasons for their votes in any voting body, but the ones who did had a variety of reasons why they weren't supportive of that particular framework. I wouldn't say there was one overarching reason. There were several that I heard from the people who explained their votes.
The vote would go to the public. Does it have to be, are there certain times, either is it either a May or a November situation when it would go to the voters?
We have not started to have those discussions on the RTA board. I accept to say that I know that we would like it to be on the ballot at some point next year, mm-hmm. 2024.
Mm-hmm. I just didn't know if there were statutory reasons that say you have to do either May or November.
No. Yes. The RTA is a special taxing authority that was set up by the Arizona legislature, but the legislature gives the board the right to set the election.
There was another item of business. Vail, the folks in Vail will mm-hmm. be deciding whether or not they want to become their own city. That was the Board of Supervisors, without endorsing one way or another, just basically said, hey, folks, go ahead, decide what you want to do.
The board has certain responsibilities under state law anytime an incorporation effort is presented to us. And as Ms. Lesher said in her memorandum to us, our responsibilities yesterday were largely ministerial. What we essentially did was give the blessing for the incorporation effort to move forward into campaign mode and to see if they can convince a majority of the voters in that area if they want to incorporate.
They have tried before.
That is true.
A couple of times they tried before. All right. Circling back, I had another question about the sheriff and the jail. Is there any update on the group that has been taking a closer look at our jail?
We haven't had any recent updates, but they had 180 days, the Blue Ribbon Commission that the board formed at the recommendation of the county administrator. And you know, we're very fortunate to have the former Oro Valley Police Chief and town manager, Danny Sharp, heading up that Blue Ribbon Commission. And he's really got an excellent group of people working with him, and they're going to be looking at operations, at facility concerns, at possible ways of financing a new jail if they recommend one. But they also can make recommendations as to improvements to the existing facility. But we don't have any recent updates on their work.
And I only have a few seconds, but sure. I think it's worth noting about a fiber ring planned around Tucson. Could you give us in 30 seconds what that is about?
About a third of the people who live in the county are going to be impacted by this federal grant. We have to provide a local match along with some of the local jurisdictions. It is going to enhance broadband and internet reach, especially for families. And about 10% of our families have no broadband, no internet. And it's also going to enhance connections for the people who do have it. So it is it's a terrific thing for about a third of the households in Pima County, especially the 10% who don't have broadband or internet.
All right. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. Buckmaster back with you in about 23 hours. On behalf of Supervisor Scott and Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everyone well.